Any comments, Stephanie, about how you choose a PARP inhibitor in the platinum sensitive situation?
So that is a good question. I think in terms of efficacy, activity, I think these three PARP inhibitor are probably similar in terms of activity. So I think it's potentially the profile of the side effect that can be taken into account. Also, the fact that one PARP is only once a day and the other one are BID, so that can be also something to discuss with the patient as well. We're waiting the overall survival data for the rucaparib and niraparib, but we recently at the abstract, so we're waiting the full data for the presentation, but we have recently the overall survival update from SOLO2 for the patient mm-hmm. who are germline BRCA mutation, and it's an impressive, unprecedented, I would say, benefit of overall survival in this population. So I think that is important to take into account in the decision.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to seeing the survival data on these upfront trials because the hazard rates and recurrence are just spectacular. Never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
But Joyce, here's another situation in platinum sensitive recurrent. Joyce is a patient who has, you know, we said BRCA wild type, HRD negative in the platinum sensitive recurrent situation. You can see there's a whole spectrum of choices involving Bev and all the PARP inhibitors, Joyce. So I guess you can imagine somebody going to seven different doctors and getting seven different recommendations here, but where would you fit in on this spectrum, Joyce?
Well, so I think this is, you know, this comes back to philosophically sort of this balance. If you've got somebody with relapsed disease and this woman has relapsed disease, are you going to cure them by giving them more sort of therapy at this point? And then it becomes very much a balance of, you know, what is the value of a progression-free survival benefit versus not? This woman doesn't have a BRCA mutation, so I don't think we have, you know, we don't have a suggestion that PARP inhibitor maintenance in this setting is, I'm sorry, I can't see it. This was HRD negative, I think also, that we don't see, you know, we don't have evidence that a PARP inhibitor or that Bev in this setting, outside of DOG-213 maybe, Rob, is going to give you an OS benefit. Then it really becomes a balance, you know, what is it worth to the patient to be on a pill? What is it worth to on a patient to be mm-hmm. on a maintenance sort of IV infusion that you have to keep coming in for indefinitely until you relapse versus what is it worth of them to basically be done yeah. and sort of yeah. move on? I think of yeah. the choices that were up there, the one that I really have some hesitance about is, you know, people who are giving, you know, chemo plus Bev followed plus Bev plus PARP.
Olaparib.
So I think we just don't have data that's, you know, going to really help patients and potentially is just going to contribute to a lot of financial toxicity.
Joyce, a couple other practical questions that came up. I think I might have gone over one, but a couple questions. One, PARP after PARP. Patient has a BRCA germline mutation. They've already gotten one PARP inhibitor, progressed. Would you try another one? What about rechallenge to a patient who had, you know, sort of adjuvant PARP inhibitor? So Joyce, PARP after PARP. And then can you also address the issue of stopping PARP and patients are going to have surgery?
Yeah, so I think PARP after PARP, you know, somebody who has progressed through a PARP, we don't have data right now that switching them to one of the other PARP inhibitors is going to overcome their mechanism of resistance, whatever that might have been. And so in general, I do not take somebody who has actively progressed on a PARP and put them on another PARP. A PARP combination, absolutely, I'm interested in exploring that in trials, but just to put them on another PARP, I think is not generally going to benefit them. It's a lot more complicated without data right now when you think about somebody who has progressed on adjuvant PARP, but has finished adjuvant PARP in the frontline setting, relapses, goes back on platinum, has a BRCA mutation. Are they going to benefit from getting PARP inhibitor again? Because they've never progressed on the PARP. And I think we don't know that answer right now. That's what the OREO trial hopefully will tell us. Right now my inclination is I err on the side of giving them a chance, although I will say that is practicing completely without data and is not sort of, you know, that's not supported so much as I'm trying to give my patients the chance that I can while I don't have data to support that.
Stephanie, very practical question. Stephanie, actually a couple of people asked about it. A patient's going to have surgery. People brought up the patients having prophylactic mastectomy, for example. How far in advance would you stop the PARP inhibitor prior to surgery? If so, how long, Stephanie? When do you restart it? And is this mainly about cytopenias or also wound healing?
So the half-life is short for PARP inhibitor treatment. So that is very important. And again, it depends the type of surgery. So if it's really a minor surgery, I think stopping just one day before is probably sufficient. And then it depends on how the patient is doing post-op. But if the patient is well and don't have any problem of wound healing and everything, I think to resume 2-3 days post-op could be reasonable.
That's interesting. That's a lot quicker than I would have thought. And I think a lot of people answer. Joyce, how far in advance do you typically stop people before surgery?
So for, you know, like Stephanie said, for something that's not a major surgery, I will stop probably 48 hours to 72 hours beforehand because the half-life is short. Now, if somebody has, you know, some, you know, residual cytopenias on the PARP inhibitor that they just sort of stay on, then I'll stop them a little bit sooner. And then post-surgically, I resume sort of depending upon how their healing is going.
Yeah. Right. So the last thing was...
We often have this question as well for the dental work. So I think for the dental work is definitely...
That's the most common.
It's the most common. So extraction. It's why my answer is really for the dental. So it's why maybe why you are surprised. But usually the most common question regarding the dental work. And that I think it's usually 2-3 days after the dental work is really fine usually.
Yeah, the question we asked actually in the survey was hip replacement. So that's a little bit more...
Yeah, it was
so that's different.
Yeah.
So that is different.